The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, let's take a look at what's coming up on our big and small screens for the week ahead. And we're joined today by Brian Lloyd, movies editor of Entertainment.ie, and Kay Sheehy, series producer on RTE's Arena. And guys, you're welcome.
Thanks,
and
Ben.
We were just discussing on Colleen Kuhn there and the Irish language in general. You've both seen it. Kay, what did you think?
I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's based on such a wonderful source material, fostered by Claire Keegan, which was such a sparse written book, and what the filmmakers have done is translated this into a cinematic form. So it's sparse. She's a shy girl, so she doesn't say anything very much. Coit, played by the wonderful Catherine Clench, and then she comes from this chaotic home where she's uncared for, unloved, because there's too much going on in that house. And then she goes to these kind of middle-aged couple, played by Andrew Bennett and Carrie Crowley, and she's just, you know, gets affection, attention from the mother. The father is a little bit more circumspect because I think he's just afraid of, you know, connecting too closely with her. But as it goes on, it develops, because you can see that there's been a big loss in that family, in that couple. The wallpaper in her room tells the story of that, and you have this sense of ominous foreboding all through the film. While it's really sensuous at the beginning, you see she's a girl who loves, you know, hanging around in the grass and loving nature. And then when she goes and spends time with the mother, the foster mother, you can see how she loves, you know, drinking fresh well water. It's just like a sensuous delight of one of those dappled kind of summer days in the 70s in Ireland. Or as we okay. think we remember them to be.
So lovely, evocative film. Brian, your name was being taken in vain here earlier.
I've heard.
The best Irish language film ever.
But I actually had it out right outside. It was hilarious. He didn't realise it was me that wrote that headline. Yeah, I caught him out.
So you did give it a 5-star
review. I did,
yeah. It sounds, from what Kate's saying there as well, and from what the reviews are saying, that this is driven by three extraordinary performances as well, including by a child.
Yeah.
Inexperienced actor who has incredible poise.
That's it. I mean, that's the thing of it, is the fact that, like, she's able to do so much with so little. And that really is the one word I would say about this film, is how economical it is. It's all about really the kind of the poetry of silence, the idea of, like, these quiet moments that so much is able to fill up with it, you know. I mean, Catherine Clench, I mean, I want to see everything she does next, because, I mean, if she's able to do this with this, there's no telling what she can do. Carrie Crowley as well, I thought was fantastic. Andrew Bennett, brilliant performance. He's able to give this kind of, off this sort of wounded, you know, completely vulnerable but desperately trying to keep it together performance. Carrie Crowley as well, I mean, she's so warm and natural. It just kind of comes out of the screen as well. And even the way that Colin Bareide directed it as well. Like, I mean, like Kate was saying, like, it looks so lush. Everything looks so gorgeous. You just want to, like, sink into the screen as you watch it. Like, so it's fantastic.
Okay, and sounds like one to be seen in the cinema.
Definitely.
As well. And it is in selected cinemas nationwide now. Now, Kay, Conversations with Friends is the other big talking point. So it will, I think, the BBC Three today. It'll be on RTE1 on Wednesday, when from 9:35 people can see episode 1 and 2. You have seen episode 1 and 2.
Yes.
What can you report?
So a little bit like the Colleen Kuhn, it's kind of a celebration of Irish reticence. The central characters are Frances and her friend Bobby. Bobby is American, Frances is Irish, from Mayo. She's going to Trinity. She's full of ideas. They do a duet, which is a stand-up duet with her poetry. But she's dogged by self-consciousness, inarticulacy. So when she meets...
This is all
this,
sounding familiar, yeah.
Yeah, so when she meets this couple who are much older, well, they're maybe 10 years older than them, Nick and Melissa, played by Jemima Kirk and Joe Alwyn, they are, you know, intrigued by the sophistication of this couple, and they become friendly with them. But there's all these kind of really awkward conversations. Because even though it's called Conversations with Friends, I didn't realise it was ironic. It's just they can't have conversations because they can barely articulate a sentence without second guessing themselves and being awkward. So I think Lynne Abrahamson and the scriptwriters can capture that wonderfully. Now, it's about, I'm into episode 7, they're half-hour episodes, and they really start, we start hearing the real conversations. So it does take a lot, you know, to, it's kind of hard going at times when you think, I wish they could say what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Whereas there's these kind of awkward conversations around Tennessee Williams and, you know, I don't know, okay, pole dancing and stuff. But
will it be the sensation that normal people was?
No, I don't think so, because I think while Alison Oliver, who plays Frances, is terrific, and we see the world from her, you know, self-conscious, inarticulate point of view, we don't get to know the other characters sufficiently. Where we had Marianne and Connell, and they were kind of split screen almost. You could see their equal dilemmas and the problems they had getting together. You don't kind of get that dynamic. There are sex scenes. They're more beautiful tableaus than really as believable, okay, as normal people were.
Not enough sex for Katie.
Well, that's true.
Brian, yeah, this is the other thing everybody is talking about. Mm. I think largely based on a bonkers trailer.
Yeah.
Is this Everything Everywhere All at Once, which, yeah, sounds amazing, if,
yes,
mind-blowing.
Completely. And I would say as well that, like, it's definitely not a film for everyone. I think if you're looking for a kind of a relaxing time, just go watch Downton Abbey or something like that. This is not it. Michelle Yeoh plays this laundromat owner who's trying to juggle an IRS audit, her father staying with her, her husband about to divorce her, and her daughter then revealing herself to be in a gay relationship. And all while this is happening, she then discovers that she, in another universe, discovered a way to jump between universes. So on basis of that, you've basically got a slapstick comedy, a sci-fi action film, a kung fu film, a romance film along the lines of Wong Kar-wai, and then you just have a kind of weird metaphysical Michel Gondry kind of thing. So it is literally Everything Everywhere All at Once. It couldn't have been done with anyone else except Michelle Yeoh, because she is able to go from kung fu to, you know, heart-wrenching drama to slapstick comedy, literally in the blink of an eye, and you don't lose that through line at all.
Okay, so it works, does it?
Oh, no, it totally works. Oh, no, yeah, absolutely works. I would say, though, that, like, be prepared, you know, that kind of way. It's going to,
yeah, okay,
if you walk out of it and your head is spinning, that's correct. You're supposed to be like that.
Okay. Kay, the a bit of Netflix, The Mystery of Marilyn, The Unheard Tape. So I saw this is claiming to shed new light on the circumstances surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. Does it?
Well, I think it does, because I think before, when I heard things about the Kennedys' involvement with Marilyn Monroe, I thought, you know, I kind of believe maybe she had affairs with them, but I didn't realise that, you know, Bobby Kennedy was there on the night in her home in LA. And really, that's what Anthony Summers has done. He's proved it a long time ago with his books, Goddess, but I guess it's 60 years since her death. So what they've done is they have got the tapes that he talked to John Huston, he talked to all the people who had her home under surveillance, which it was by the Jimmy Hoffa's people who ran the Teamsters Union and was Robert Kennedy's, you know, nemesis. And they have taken these tapes and they have lip-synced them with actors. So there's a kind of look of madmen about it as these people sit around having conversations saying, yes, I remember that evening very well. You know, Robert Kennedy was in the ambulance that took her to the hospital while she was still alive, and then the ambulance comes back. Then Robert Kennedy is swooped out of LA, and meanwhile the FBI clear up the room, and they plant this other story saying it was the housekeeper found her and then her doctor came along. Whereas there had been a whole tethera before that. She had this awful argument with Robert Kennedy. The Kennedys wanted to drop her because she now was a bit too loose with all her knowledge of their feelings about nuclear warfare and Cuba, etc. So they drop her. She has this awful barney with Robert Kennedy, who's, I guess, in Washington. He flies in because, unlike JFK, who didn't have a real deep relationship with her, it seems that maybe Robert did, and he's trying to solve the situation, but when he comes, she's dead.
Okay.
I know you don't believe it, but I mean, there are so many people. There's the surveillance people. There's the people who were the ambulance drivers. I was gobsmacked because I never believed this stuff.
Yeah.
And then watching this by Anthony Summers, who lives down in Waterford now, is just terrific. It's great, a great watch.
Okay, how many of them are there?
Only one.
Only one, perfect, yeah, because they're stretching these things a bit too much these days. Brian, staying on Netflix, I think a lot of people have had enough of true crime at this stage, but this thing Clark, it sounds like true crime, but not as we've seen it before.
No, definitely not, I know, I'm the exact same as well. I'm worn out by these true crime things. They just seem to be completely tedious, completely boring, just so kind of, as you say, stretching things out. Clark is not that at all. It's directed by a guy called Jonas Åkerlund, who is known for doing very well-known music videos, and he also did a film a couple of years back called Lords of Chaos, which was this great another true crime thing. But basically the point is that Clark is far more energetic. Bill Skarsgård plays this guy Clark Olofsson, who was this basically mastermind criminal in Sweden who actually was responsible for the phrase Stockholm Syndrome. He took hostages in this bank in Sweden, and he was so kind of gregarious and so kind of over the top that the people in it actually were kind of sucked into the whole world with him. And that's actually what Clark does really well, is the fact that, you know, he is this completely reprehensible person. He is absolutely awful in every way, shape or form. But people just seem to be kind of sucked into his orbit. And they're kind of, there's one scene in it after he goes out on this big massive bender with a friend of his that he picked up on the side of the road. And the friend, after the morning after, the friend is in the bed kind of looking around thinking, how did I end up here? Like, you know, what happened? And like, there's your man Clark running off, having a great time. So it does kind of capture that idea of people like this who are just completely toxic personalities, but you are just sucked into their world. I think it does it very well. And Bill Skarsgård as well. I mean, he played Pennywise the Clown in It. He does have that kind of menacing presence.
He's great.
But at the same time, he's very, very likable. So yeah, it has that kind of dichotomy very well.
Okay, and also on Netflix came the Lincoln Lawyer. This was a movie.
Matthew McConaughey was in it.
Yeah.
So it was like when Matthew McConaughey used to do rom-coms, and this was the first thing that rehabilitated him into the actor that led on to him winning the Oscar. And he was terrific in it. It's based on a Michael Connelly book. He's Harry Bosch's, the other Michael Connelly character's half-brother, and he drives around in a Lincoln because he is so busy. He goes from court case to court case. But anyway, we meet this new Mickey Haller, who is nothing like Matthew McConaughey. He's Manuel Garcia Ruffalo, far too nice to be driving around in a Lincoln and with not guilty on his registration plates. He's not cool enough for what's being put upon him. So what we do is there's a pretty decent story. It's about he gets all these cases from an ex-lawyer, and one of the cases is a tech giant who is accused of killing his wife and the wife's lover. But we don't get that until about episode 3, because we're filling out not very engaging Manuel Garcia with, you know, his ex-wife, ex-wife number two, the Lincoln, and all these other stuff.
So I'm hearing you watch this so that we don't have to.
I did that for you,
Brenda. We appreciate that. Thank you very much, Kay Sheehy. And thank you, Brian Lloyd.